This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Where do I take this pain of mine? I run, but it stays right by my side.
So tell me, open, pour me out the things inside that scream and shout. And the pain still hates me. Everybody, Geek and Sassy, episode number 4. Welcome.
Yay!
Thank you for coming back for another episode. I'm so happy to be here with my wonderful, beautiful friend Miranda.
Hi!
Yay! So we are just really trucking along with this podcast thing. I think it's been going pretty well. What do you think?
I think it has been too. We've been getting some great feedback, some interesting feedback, even from our mothers.
Yes.
So I think it's really great. Like, it makes me happy. I mean, we're at number 4, and, you know, Place to Be Nation is still allowing us to send them our stuff. So.
That's true. Gotta make sure that they're happy with us.
Right. So those things being said, I think we're doing really good. And we have some, you know, we're starting to be more like our other Place to Be Nation podcast friends and starting to actually make more of a plan and not be so go with the flow, which we will still be, but try to plan a few things out and make listeners happy.
I think we're doing that pretty well. What's exciting? Tell me something exciting. What's going on with you?
Well, other than the same old school auction stuff that, gosh, I just don't even want to talk about. I've been trying to add more content to not only our Geek and Sassy sites that we have now, you know, Instagram and stuff, but I, like, obviously Mom's Nerd was my first. So I've been trying to add, like, a lot more stuff to that. And in that, I, like, research, like, geeky news, I guess you would say, every day, really, when I see something I'm really interested in. And this week was actually thanks to friends of ours in the group you and I are in. They posted 2 separate Benedict Cumberbatch Doctor Strange covers. One was for Entertainment Weekly, and the other one was for Vanity Fair.
I saw the Entertainment Weekly one.
Oh,
that was amazing.
So happy. So happy. So I was like, I must buy this. I need this so bad. So I actually, like, shared the link so the people that follow me there can, like, read it. And he talks a little bit about the movie. And, of course, it's just amazing pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch. And Loot Crate, which I know pretty much everybody that listens to us knows what that is. But they just announced that they're going to be doing a cheaper, smaller box called Loot Crate for Her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think that is completely fantastic that they are catering to us specifically. And it's not that we're trying to leave the boys out, but I think for so long we were just given boys shirts and not left out, but kind of like on the back burner of the geek culture. Like, it was odd. Oh, you only like that because your boyfriend does, or oh, you only like it because your brother taught you about it. And I think it's way more predominant now, and people are realizing that no, these women are geeks because they want to be geeks. Let's give them the things that they want. So I think it's fantastic that we now get something that's ours and not just a female version of the Loot Crate that goes out, you know, because they have one and you pick, do you want a men's shirt or a women's shirt? And I'm always like, well, that's great, but that's kind of, like, not specific to me sometimes.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that, because I actually, John got me a Loot Crate subscription for my birthday, and I was really excited about it. But when he set up the order, he chose women's shirts. And
right.
I just don't happen to like the cut of women's shirts, because
like a large or an extra large is, no.
Well, like, no, like, I get that because in those shirts from Loot Crate, like, I myself have to get, like, a women's large or extra large. And I don't know. I know this may sound really bad, but when you look at a tag of a women's shirt and you're like, I don't want to wear an extra large, like, and you really don't, it's, I don't know, depressing. Because, like you said, it's a specific cut. Like,
yeah, it's always slimmer and the sleeves are shorter. And
they're tighter.
Yeah, they're tighter. Sleeves. And, you know, I made him change it to a guy's shirt. I'm like, I'm never, and it kind of sucked because in my first box, there was a really cool, like, Stark Racing shirt. I really like the shirt, but I'm like, this is indecent to wear in public. I cannot wear this shirt in public.
Well, maybe, you know, cause sometimes they sell, like, leftover items, like, after all the boxes have gone out. So maybe you could get lucky and contact them and say, you know, this was a gift and the shirt is fantastic, but it is not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
You know, Loot Crate, do you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd try that.
I will try that because I really like that shirt. And I was super excited about getting the subscription. But why does the women's box, why is it smaller? Or like, just because, well, it's cheaper?
It is. I think it's a smaller, and they have, apparently they've done this before, but I was not aware of it. I think it may have been done like on a trial thing. And this month, which I think I'm going to subscribe for this month because it's this edition, is Edward Scissorhands theme.
Oh, sweet.
You know, it's, and it's the 25th anniversary of Edward. I can't even talk. Edward Scissorhands. So I think I'm going to try it. But I think they only give you like a couple of things in it because it says, delivering apparel or accessories just for the geeky women. Past items have included scarves, leggings, tote bags, high-low tops, and makeup kits. So I don't know if maybe each month it's a different price based on what they're going to give, or if it's just $14.99 and you get one thing or you get a couple of small things. I'm not sure.
But you had me at tote bag.
I know. I have more tote bags than I know what to do with. Like, I have tote bags that are full of tote bags.
Tote bags, yes, exactly. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, I wouldn't either. But you know what's sad? Is a lot of those I got so I could take my own bag to Publix and Sam's. And what do I always forget?
Your bags.
So what do I end up buying?
Another tote bag.
Yes.
Doing your part for the environment, as always.
I mean, well, that, and shout out to Publix, but they always have, like, they went through a round of, like, 10 different designs of Star Wars. They had all, at one point, and I was thrilled because they had, like, the original Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, like, oh, Hulk. I have gotten some fantastic, like, my brother is a huge Iron Man, you know, the one that went with us to the movie. He's hardcore Iron Man. And he was like, you're not my sister since you're all Captain America. But I got him, because I grocery shop for him on occasion, and I bought his groceries and gave them to him in that bag. And he's like, I'll bring your bag back. And I was like, no, that's for you. Why would I buy myself an Iron bag? I was like, no, see, here's mine. And I still need my Hawkeye and my Captain America. And he goes, ugh.
Oh. Hashtag Team Iron Man.
Hashtag Team Cap.
Hashtag Tony was right.
Hashtag, you apparently weren't watching the same movie. Hashtag, didn't we sit, like, right beside each other? Oh, that's funny.
Well, I know you said you were working on school stuff still for your kid, but I got my school obligations done at my son's school. And like I said, we did a Star Wars skit, and it was awesome. I mean, I didn't really have much to do in the skit, but I still got to dress like a Jedi, and the kids loved it. It was a blast.
Pictures were fantastic, by the way. Like, it was
a
really
lot of
cute.
Fun. The guy who was our Vader, he's a real serious cosplayer, and he made his Vader suit, and it's like,
what?
It's freaking top notch. I mean, it was awesome.
Had he used it before, or like,
oh,
obviously,
yeah.
He has planned. Okay, so this is like, I already had this shirt.
Oh, yeah, he like goes to Dragon Con, and you know, he's like huge into cosplay, and he has a, like a Deadpool suit too that I've seen him in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So he was perfect for our team. And, I really thought it was cool because every year my son's school does a theme for the year. This year it was space. So for the fundraiser, all of the skits were kind of space related. And they were all fairly nerdy. And so I thought it was really fun. One group did a Guardians of the Galaxy skit, and they had an amazing Groot costume. It was fantastic. And then they had Star-Lord doing a dance-off with Darth Vader. Not our Vader, but another Vader. So it was really, really fun. And I'm just happy that my son gets to go to a school that is a little bit, I feel like it's on the nerdy side. You know, they don't have sports at the school, and my kid is 0% into sports. So I feel
mine
like
loves to watch them, but he's not very interested in playing anything. Like, we tried a few, and it was not for us.
Yeah, it's just, he tried soccer when he was little, and it's just not his thing, like, at all. And I'm fine with that, but I really love that he's at a school where that's okay. You know, that he doesn't play sports and he's not on a team, and, you know, there's still things for him to be involved with at his school.
I love that. I won't spoil too much, but you and I actually talked to somebody briefly, maybe, about that concept that may get brought up later.
Yes,
again.
Yes, we did.
I love that, you know, like you said, you know, that because sports aren't for every kid. And the kids that are great at sports, that's fantastic. And mm-hmm. it's great that they are into them. But that doesn't mean that our kids that aren't into them aren't as disciplined. They just have different things that they're really into and really disciplined about. So,
So what else do we have going on? Do you want to tell everybody what you've been streaming and reading?
Yeah, let's just go ahead and go, like, right into streams and reads. I told you guys last time about a book I was reading that I think at the time I was already, like, 8 hours into, and it still had, like, 12, 13 hours left. I finished it. That was The Queen of Shadows by mm-hmm. Sarah J. Maas. Mm-hmm. And so when I finished it, because, like, during your reading it, you can't, like, go back and have it tell you how much. So the final tally on that book was 20 hours and 18 minutes in audio version.
Wow.
Yeah. So it took me a little while. And I have to say, all of these, this whole series, Throne of Glass was what it is. But Throne of Glass has been so far, I've added it to one of my lists of favorite series. And you guys know that Harry Potter's on that list. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's saying something, but she does just a phenomenal job of creating this world and these characters and all these events. And I love that some of the language that's in it is modern language, but you can tell that this is clearly like I told you guys, there's castles and separate little nations and countries, and kind of like, I guess I'm picturing like medieval times, especially when they describe the clothes that they're wearing, like the dresses and how ornate they are. And so I'm picturing it as like Merlin kind of
right.
time. If anybody ever watched that show, that's what I'm picturing it as. But I love that she still has a lot of modern day language when they're talking to each other. I don't know, this book, there's a fifth one that just came out a couple months ago, so it's the next one, and I'm going to take a quick break between them because, like I said, when they're 20 and 24 hours a piece, that's a lot of material, and sometimes you just need to like decompress and digest that and move on to something not as intense, mm-hmm. Which is what I've done. And an author that I loved, and I think we talked briefly about this in our fall post, in our fall episode 2, when we were talking about Charlene Harris was going to have a book based off, or a show based off of a book.
Yes.
Which was a spinoff of another, like, she created that book series because of another book series that she had.
Right.
So she has the one that actually got me started reading Charlaine Harris. She decided it's going really great. Lifetime has made, like, I think would have fixing to make the third or fourth movie of the book series. So she decided to continue it because it had done, she wrote the last one in like the 90s, I think. So she could have let it go. And that's the Aurora Tea Garden series, which Candace Cameron Bure plays her in the Lifetime movies.
Oh.
And she's adorably fantastic for that role. Like, she is kind of what I pictured when they were, because she's supposed to be petite and short and, you know, she's pretty and cute, but she doesn't think she's pretty and cute, you know, kind of cliche. Right. But Charlaine decided, because her fans, like, loved the series so much, and they were like, yeah, you know, you ended it fine, and it could have be, it could be closure, but it could be a continuation. And so that's, she picked right up and she did it, and she gave us another one that just came out this week. I started that, and it's called All the Little Liars. And I don't really want to give too much away, because if you've never read this series, I'd like you to start back at one. But a lot of things have changed from the time of the first book to now, and we get to see some characters that we haven't got to see a lot of since like book one and two. So it's nice to have them back and to have them in the roles that they're playing now. I'm about 13 chapters in, and it's just starting to get like, I think it was chapter 8 before what is like the big exploding moment of the book, like that causes the whole book basically. Because that's Aurora's thing, is she loves to investigate mysteries. But she's not, like, she used to be in this club, which I think is the name of book one, called Real Murders Club. And each person would take a turn at each meeting, and they would go in depth of, like, an old murder, usually an unsolved one, and they would talk about the theories and the things behind it. So she's kind of a girl after my own heart, because it's really weird, but, you know, like I said, I grew up a detective's daughter. And then I did work for a police department for almost 5 years. So this is something that I actually like that. I like that suspense of whodunit, basically. And you get that with Aurora, and you get to watch her try to figure out whodunit.
That's
but
awesome.
This time it's kind of, it's someone is in trouble that is very dear to her. So it kind of makes it a little more, oh my God, you know? So I'm really excited that I've been doing that. So I'll let you tell us what you've been reading before we go to streaming, I guess. Because I think we have a lot of the same stream things.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's true. Well, I picked up my first Marvel number ones of two different books.
Which, what?
These are not my first Marvel books, because I've read trades of Iron Man and Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan Marvel, and a handful of Daredevil, I think. But these are my first number one issues. And it was a mixed bag for me. The good part being Jessica Jones, number one, by Brian Michael Bendis, of course. I really like this book. After having done the whole rebirth thing, I feel more comfortable just starting at a number one without knowing her continuity. So there's going to be gaps, and there's going to be things that are mentioned that I don't know what they're talking about, obviously. But like I said, I'm used to that because, hello, rebirth. But I think I'm just able to go with it and to just go with what they give me on the page and not try to worry so much about what does that joke mean or what is she talking about here? Because I could still follow this story without having to know her continuity.
Right.
And I know some about her because of the TV show, and, you know, I know some of the characters. But I really like this book. Jessica appeals to me for her humor, her sarcastic wit. She's always struck me as very dark as a very dark character, and that appeals to me. I actually ended up picking up trade of Alias over my birthday weekend last weekend. So I will go back and read, you know, that, and maybe it will help me kind of understand a little bit more about what's going on this. But on this book itself, I really did like it. And I will definitely add it to my pull list. So it'll be my first Marvel book on my pull list.
Yay!
On the flip side of that is Cage number one. And I don't know what I was expecting with this book. I guess maybe I thought it would be a little bit more like Jessica Jones or maybe the Luke Cage TV series. But it's not. It's a tad racist.
Really? I didn't read that one, so.
And maybe I can't say that, but to me it felt really, like, uncomfortable in some of the dialogue and even the art. It looks like a cartoon, like a Teen Titans Go type with the action and the way it looks. I don't know. It was off-putting. Not particularly interesting to me. So this one is not for me. And that's okay. You know, I no ill will towards you, but I'm not going to read you. So there's that.
Well, no, because I feel like you shouldn't be uncomfortable in reading something. And if you feel that uncomfortable about reading something, then I just don't feel like it's for you.
Yeah, I
felt that way about a book before. So, like, I get it.
And maybe I'm just not picking up on what it's supposed to be. Maybe it's just over my head and I'm missing it. And that's fine, too. But I really can't tell where they're supposed to be going with it. And, you know, that's cool. Something that I did love, which I will talk about later, is Green Arrow number 8. It's... Oliver ends up on an island. Shocker.
What? Yeah. We never saw that happening.
I know, right? It's a very new concept. But Black Canary ends up washed up with him, and they had these amazing scenes on the beach. A little bit of a sexy time on the beach. It's nice. I like it.
That is the only, like, I only like them together in the comics. That's all,
yes,
I'm saying.
Yes, and I know that they're, you know, they're like one of the top tier DC couples, and you know, I'm not that invested in them together as far as other people are, as much as other people are. But I do like them together in this book, especially. The art is really great. They just have these little moments together that are just, they really stand out. This book just, it just made my little fangirl heart happy, and I really like this issue. But more on that later. Something else that made me happy was Green Lanterns number 8, because it always makes me happy. It has a fantastic cover. It's kind of like their Halloween issue.
I saw some of the comics actually did Halloween issues, and I was really bummed that I didn't have any of those on my pull list. Like, I didn't, like, pay attention to ask. That and the Zoom Zoom covers. I was like, why didn't I get those?
I really like the cover of this because it's Jessica and Simon, and of course, they're, you know, Green Lanterns, but they have, she has, like, a witch hat on, and he has, like, looks like a vampire teeth in his mouth. You know, they made their constructs to look like costumes, but they're already wearing costumes. So I think that's cute. Then they have the little kids on the front, one's dressed like Flash, one dressed like Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. So I just thought it was really adorable. And Jessica, again, just her humor just appeals to me. She just has this quirky little sense of humor that never fails to make me smile. And I think her and Simon on the past several issues have really built up this thing where they can have this back and forth, and that there's not some of the underlying animosity that there was in the beginning of the series, and they've really just started to get really comfortable with each other. And it shows, you know, there's basically they're taking the kids trick-or-treating and at the same time looking for someone that they've lost. And he has what's called the Phantom Ring, which is a pretty cool concept because it's a ring like the Green Lantern Ring, but anybody could use it. It doesn't have to choose you. So
I don't know how I feel about that. I'm going to have to read it because I don't know how I feel about that.
I like where this story is going. It might not be wholly original, but, you know, it is for me because I've never read this stuff before. And Jessica has, you know, some really good stuff in here, like always. This book just makes me happy, and it's one of the things that has kept me in this, honestly. I love her character so much. And then briefly, Wonder Woman is a monthly book that...
Oh, nice.
I read the number one on a whim, and I ended up really liking it. And I don't...
The cover of that number one was just phenomenal.
Yeah, that was part of the reason I got it, too. And then my local shop, I don't think, ordered any of the number twos, but I went to another shop and I finally got the number two and read it. Didn't hit me as much as number one did. It's very dialogue heavy. Like, I'm like looking at the page, is it, the art's good and, you know, it looks great, but there's lots of words. It's very, very wordy.
Oh, is it one of those, like, we talked about, I think Russell said this. I don't know if it's on our show or his show. Sorry, I'm trying to blurring this together because I'm the one that said it. But when he said something about, you know, books that they put so much reading in there. Like, yeah, I don't mind reading. I'm a reader. Right. But it's a comic. And sometimes you need to let the screen, each, I call them panels. Right. Each panel, like, speak for itself.
Right.
And, you know, finding that you don't need so much blah, 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 blah.
And there's,
you know,
so like. And the panels are small, sort of choppy, and then on top of that, you have all the words. I feel like it loses a little bit, but Steele is in this, and I liked him. Him and Lana are together in this, and I liked that. To me, that was the best part. And then somebody, much like the first issue. What got me to come back to this book is they hooked me in the last page of the first issue, and then they did the same thing in this one. There we go. Sorry, having some technical difficulties.
It happens.
Anyway. So the last page, you know, as I was reading it, I was like, well, okay. And then I get to the last page, I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm definitely going to read the number three.
Well, maybe it won't be so wordy.
Maybe not. I'm hoping not. But I do like this. And it's only monthly, so it's, I guess they have to get their words in where they can.
Okay. We'll go with that.
And my books for this week I just managed to pick up today, so I haven't caught up on those yet. So that's all I've got for books.
Well, have you actually been streaming anything, or have you actually only been watching like the new episodes of things coming on?
I've only been watching the new episodes of things. What about
so
you?
Well, I actually have been streaming some, like, during the day while I'm doing laundry and stuff. I don't know. I have all these things recorded, you know, that's been happening. Mm-hmm. And some I let, like, a couple build up before I watch them. Some I watch them on the night of. But, like, during the day when I'm trying to, like, wash clothes and dishes and things like that, sometimes I want something that, like, not that I don't want to pay attention to, because this is definitely a show I love, but it's I'm doing, like, a rewatch of it, because this is something you and I want to possibly do a podcast on later, but Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yes.
You know, because since they're bringing it back, like, I remember pretty much everything, but there's, like, little quirky moments that happen in the episode. You're like, ha, I forgot about that. Like, I was watching the Rory's Dance mm-hmm. episode the other day, and I totally forgot about the fighting at the dance.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been watching that. And then, of course, one of the new shows that I don't know if you decided to watch it, but CW has it. It's called No Tomorrow.
I did watch the first episode.
Okay, so I went ahead and watched the second episode, which aired just this week. And I don't know. I have to say I love this show so much. I mean,
already?
Yes, already. Because, yeah, he's a little cray-cray, mm-hmm. but in episode 2, you kind of learn more, like, why he is this way. And it kind of hits you in, like, the feels, which CW is good at making happen, and you don't think it's going to happen. I mean, he's freaking gorgeous, too. I mean, he was Gallivant, guys.
Yeah, he is gorgeous.
He's gorgeous. And she is adorable.
She, like, is.
I don't think I've seen her in anything before. Mm-mm. And I'm wondering, like, why haven't I? Because she is just, I'm going to have to look up her name, because I don't even think I know what her name is. But she is, and they fit really well together. And then her family, because, you know, she always asks, like, her mom and her dad and her sister all in there. And her dad cracks me up. Like, this week he was trying to win top salesman at the appliance store he works at.
Oh, I did see one.
And he was, like,
scene.
Flipping out.
Yeah.
Like, he just sold a hot tub.
Isn't he?
He just sold a hot tub in I don't know how many years. And he's like, oh, my God. I can't sell enough, like, microwaves to make up to that.
Isn't he the guy from Married with Children? Isn't that what he's been on before?
He's not. Like, people are going to be like, oh.
No, yeah, he's the neighbor. He's the neighbor.
Yeah, I think he was the neighbor.
Yeah.
Let me look. But I think he was... they're the neighbor married right. to
the annoying chick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That was a sidebar. Yeah,
was her name Marcy?
Yeah. Marcy.
Yeah. I think that is who her dad is. And I can't for the life of me remember what her dad's name is right now for me to click in here. Cause I'm not seeing a picture of the gentleman. No, maybe that is him. Ted McGinley.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, he was. He was on Married with Children. He sure was. But yeah, he plays her dad. Of course, he's older now.
Right. He still looks all right, though.
He does, but he looks, like, you know, different. And mm-hmm. it kind of plays into the, like, frazzled. Jefferson Darcy.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. He was married to Marcy Darcy.
Marcy Darcy. How did we forget that?
I didn't look up her name. It just came to me once I saw her name. But he plays Evie's dad, and she's played by Tori Anderson. And like I said, you guys should look her up. She's adorable, and I don't know how I have never heard of her before. What's funny is apparently she was in an episode of Warehouse 13, and then an episode of Rookie Blue, and I love both of those shows. So I don't know how I missed. Oh, and she was in an episode on Smallville?
Oh, well, I haven't come to that one yet.
Well, this was, like, way back in 2004, so there's a chance you may go, is that? They complement each other very well, the two characters, Xavier and Evie. Like, they do a really good job. I am very pleased with it. And of course, you know, I've been watching American Horror Story faithfully.
Mm-hmm. How's that going?
Well, remember how he came out, and Ryan Murphy came out, and he said, you know, 1 through 6 were going to be its own thing, and then I think 7 mm-hmm. was going to be its own thing, and then 8 through 10 would be another deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's right, because the way they ended last night, it was almost like, oh, well, my husband actually watched it with me, because he was home last night, and he goes, so is that it? Didn't it just start?
Hmm.
Like, I won't spoil it for anybody that hasn't watched it yet, but he was like, is that it? Did it just start? I was like, yeah, and then I told him the whole, like, what Ryan Murphy said in an interview, and he goes, well, I would hope so, because if that's all that they've had for one season, that wasn't that spectacular. And he's watched 2 of the episodes with me so far. And I think, I want to say, isn't it on like 4 or 5? I mean, it's been on.
At least 4.
It started before everything else started.
Yeah.
So this is, I would have to look to see what episode that was. But yeah, I want to say that was episode 5. And he was like, he's watched 2 of the 5. And he was kind of like, really? He was like, I thought you loved this show. And I was like, I do. I was like, but I'm not understanding what's going on here. And I really hope with the whole, like, the one episode is its own. And then the next, it all goes together, but how it's like a story, its own story, a story. And then the last episode, it ties it all back in together. So that's why when you asked me if I was going to give up on it, I'm not going to give up on it, because I want to see, like, what the crap is going on.
I can't decide if Ryan Murphy is just, like, very innovative and you know, just pushing the envelope on what he can kind of get away with on network TV, or if he's just being random and dumb.
Well, he's screwing with my brain for sure.
So, I mean, I guess Tom will tell him that, but because he's kind of doing the same thing over on Scream Queens. Because there are parts of that show where I feel like, why am I watching this? And then something will happen, I'll be like, that's why I'm watching this.
Well, that's kind of been, that was kind of the first season too, if you really think about it.
It is, but it seemed a lot more enjoyable, I feel like, the first season. But then every episode, they managed to get John Stamos coming out of the shower. And I'm like, yeah, this show's great.
And Chad Redwell was half naked.
Chad Redwell was in the shower, and with that guy is just freaking hilarious.
I know, but did you watch this week?
Yes.
I don't want to spoil it for everybody else, but aww.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I didn't want to spoil it either. I wasn't happy with that.
I wasn't either. I was like, aww.
Yeah.
How dare you let that character live all through season 1 and then, like, bring him into season 2 and bam.
No spoilers. Right. No spoilers.
Well, I didn't say who it was. It could have been a nonchalant character. Just, you know.
And then a shout out to, I think it was Sherry O'Terry. Wasn't she the guest star in that episode? The orgasm lady?
I think that's who it was. That was hysterical.
It was
she's like, funny, and my husband loved me. And I was like, oh my God.
That was pretty
exactly
great.
How it went, folks. She actually did. She was like, which was funny, because basically, if you guys haven't been watching, like, any of the season, like, this season is about the hospital that they're all working in or a part of, right? Well, this hospital cures or tries to cure really weird, out there, nobody knows what to do with them, like, diseases and issues.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, the character that we're talking about that was, like, the guest star this week, she just randomly, during yoga class one day, started having, like, these extreme orgasms for no reason.
Spontaneous and continuous.
Yes, spontaneous and continuous were their favorite words.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know why. And they keep happening, and apparently now her husband has left her, and she can't handle it, and for the first time ever, you'll hear a woman go, I want them to stop. I want them to go away.
Exactly. And so, fun fact, that is an actual medical condition.
Is it really?
I Googled it. It exists.
Well, from what I understand, most of these medical conditions, because I heard somebody else comment on another episode where they were like, I looked it up. That's real. Apparently, all of these are that they're talking about, and they sound so outlandish. But I think they over-exaggerate.
Right,
The girl that, was it episode one, actually? Where she had all the hair everywhere?
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's called, but that's, a for real thing.
That's true. That is. Well, I mean, to me, that's a hook to me as that show. That's part of where I can't decide if he's crazy or really smart, you know, because if that's the way he's going to play it, then to me, that's like a little sly, subtle way to, you know, make it seem more legit than it really is by having real random medical conditions there, even though you're in a hospital full of people that are not qualified to treat anybody at all.
No.
It's crazy, but, you know, I'm still in with it.
That's one that I really like. He's doing a good job of keeping me interested over there. And at American Horror Story, he's making me go, I'm going to make Kelly's noise, but he's making me go, Yeah, exactly. So, and I find myself just kind of making the same sound during the show. So,
okay.
I guess we'll see.
So, Flash and Arrow and Supergirl and Legends have all premiered.
Yes.
I watched Legends tonight. I know you didn't. It was amazing. We can talk about it next time.
Okay.
Oh my God, it was awesome.
But now we both are completely caught up on Flash because it's been two episodes.
Yes.
There's only been one episode of Supergirl. We've both watched that. And there has been two episodes of Arrow, but I have only watched one of them.
And I'm caught up on it.
Yeah.
What did you think about Flashpoint?
I at first, in the first episode, because I'm sorry, this is where people are going to have to plug their ears if they don't want spoilers. When they changed it and he realized he screwed up basically. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I've got to fix this. I've got to go back to my timeline. Mm-hmm. And he got back and things were still different. I was like,
of course
first I thought,
they are.
Well, right. But at first I was like, we're going back already?
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, awesome. And then he got back and all these things are different. And I was like, I don't like this. Like, I don't like Emo Sisko.
I'm not fond of Emo Sisko. I mean, the performance is really good.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. Because that just shows... And I think that shows his versatility as an actor.
I think so, too.
But I love my Sisko. Like, I have this envision of my head of what my Sisko is. Kind of like my love for Penguin. Like, I have this envision in my head of what he is and what he's supposed to be and what he's going to do next episode. And it didn't happen. Nope. Like, I was so ready to have my Sisko back. And... I don't.
I guess I was just confused about Barry's confusion because he's gone back in time before and come back. And it, so, like.
And nothing was changed. And so I think he's very. I get what you're saying. Like, he's very confused and doesn't know what to do and how to handle this and where to go. And.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that kind of what you meant? Like.
Yeah. I don't know. I really loved the scenes with Iris.
I like her a lot more this season. You know, she's not... It's not that I disliked her, but I don't know. Just every time they were together, I was like, can Petty come back now?
No.
I liked them together, but now, like in this, like in the very first episode, when it's not even his Iris, basically.
Right.
And she's like, if you're telling me that we are so much... that we're something to each other, then I guarantee you that you're doing what you're supposed to do and I support you. And I was like, oh, hold up, wait. Iris across all timelines is the only one that is there for Barry.
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter which incarnation, whether it's his actual Iris or not, she is, you know what? I really don't have any clue who you are. But... if you're telling me this and something tells me to believe you, then I'm here for you. I was like, okay, I just got a new respect for this girl.
Yeah.
So I was very upset, though, when he came back and apparently their kiss, because of him going back in time, hadn't happened.
Yes.
I was actually upset that it hadn't happened because I was like, can this kid catch a break?
I know.
He only been trying. Like, even when they do flashbacks to them as a kid, they have the kid versions of them kind of, like, look each other. Like, yeah. Hey, we're old enough to know that boys and girls like each other. And he gives her this look. So I'm like, can this kid catch a break? Can he at least try to have a relationship with her before we're all like, next? I mean, that's the other thing. I was willing to see what a relationship between the two of them was like. I liked Patty.
I like Patty, too, but she's no Iris.
No. I'm very kind of interested to see where Tom Felton's, because, you know, we just got him this week.
Yes.
In episode 2. And he's kind of snarky again.
I liked it.
Again, but it's not a Draco Malfoy.
No.
Snarky, you mean?
No.
Because in that, you know, he was just straight up just like a brat. Yeah. Like, complete, like, I think I'm better than you, brat. Mm-hmm. This time, it's because he has amazing intuition, from what I can tell. And he doesn't like Barry because he feels like Barry is hiding something.
Yeah, he puts up with zero of Barry's bullshit. And it's kind of refreshing. You know what I mean?
It kind of is. It broke my heart at one time because I was like, oh, how dare you talk to my Barry that way?
No, but I liked it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, at first, I went all like, Mama Bear, and was like, what? You don't talk to my Barry that way? And then when he said, do you know why I don't like you? It's because I don't trust you. I know you're hiding something. I don't know what the exact words were. Mm-hmm. Sorry, and I'm butchering them, everyone that loves CW. But, you know, that's basically what he said. Like, I don't like you because I don't trust you because I know you're hiding something. And I was like, oh, he got your number. So I went from, like, Mama Bear to snap in, like, like a 30-second time.
And another high point for me was Wally in the suit.
Yes, I loved him. He's like, don't call me Kid Flash. Great. And I was like, no, you Kid Flash, buddy. And it's great.
And Wally, to me, is growing on me quite a bit, even out of the suit, too.
Yeah, I didn't like him when they first introduced him.
I was just mad about him, but...
It was his attitude. He came in, like, all huffy and puffy, and... But now he's, like, he's like, part of the group.
Yeah.
Like, and I love it.
I'm really interested to see what they do with him. And then the rival. Yeah, the rival guy.
Yeah. Dr. Alchemy.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Alchemy. Dr.
Doctor. I didn't go to alchemy school to be called Mr.
That was great. That was like one of the best parts of the episode to me. Interactions between anytime Barry and Tom's character, which I just went blank on what his name is.
Oh.
I know his name, but like...
Yeah, me too.
But when anytime they had interaction together, and then that part towards the end of episode 2 this week, when they were like... Or like you said, they kept going back and forth. They were like, Alchemy. I mean, Dr. Alchemy. And then he made that like, I was like, oh, yeah. Because it kind of felt like they were back. Like...
A little bit, yeah.
Like... felt, and they're not.
No.
Things are still different, and things are still kind of, they're not pissed at Barry like they were, but it's going to be strained. I feel like it's going to play into a strained relationship between, like, I think this is going to come back up, like, a couple episodes later, when they're like, well, you caught, you know, like, I don't know, I just foresee that, where they're like, well, you caused this, and I see that happening.
I do, too.
There was another suit I was really excited about.
What's that?
Well, Cisco joined him.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. That was awesome.
I've been waiting for that to happen. Like, I know it happened where it wasn't our Cisco, but mm-hmm. Doppelganger Cisco, mm-hmm. but it's our Cisco. So I really liked that.
And then over on Arrow, which I know you're not caught up, but that premiere episode was pretty good.
It was. I liked it. It's kind of nice to see, you know, they're mentioning some of the new characters already. They didn't get a whole lot of screen time, but they're mentioning them. They've already kind of given them little names. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I told you guys I was very excited for Curtis to have more of a role, and he clearly does, like, right out of the gate.
He does. And even in the second episode, he has a really good moment, too, where I was like, that's what I'm talking about, Curtis. And the other team, the new team members get a lot more screen time, too. But, you know, to me, it's still real awkward with the Felicity thing. Like, she still shows up to work in her little short skirts and her little high heels.
Well, because that's, like, Felicity. She has, like, this... Like, it's not trashy. She has, a sexy sophistication.
She does.
And that's how she's been since we were first introduced to her character. So I don't think they're having her do it in a sense of, like, look what you could have had. But I think I like the guy that's playing her boyfriend. He was actually on another show that didn't last very long. I can't think of the name of it right now. But it's where they all lived in Boston. They were all an Irish family that lived in Boston. And on that show, he was the baby of the kids. Like, there's three of them, and he's gay. And they're a huge basketball family. Like, their dad is the coach of the school, and their brother is a coach, and, like, their grandpa was a coach. And, of course, you know, with those Boston accents, and they're Irish. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're always drinking, and it was a good show. So I like him. I'm looking at that screen of them two together, and I'm like, he's a cute guy, but I'm going to need to learn more about him before I can say I see them together. Because right now, I'm seeing them like I see Arrow and
Laurel.
Laurel.
Yeah.
I see this.
Well, that I think that's just because, you know, Steven and Emily just have something, you know, and it's really hard to see them with somebody else. I don't know. No, hashtag Elicity.
Right?
I don't care. Like, but see, I don't know. I kind of feel sorry for Oliver, regardless of everything. But I feel sorry for him still.
I do, but at the same time, like, he created this monster. Like, he caused this. And he did tell her he just wanted her to be happy, so...
Yeah, but...
I know, I am... But I'm like Russell on this. Like, they can't continue the will they won't, they will they
no,
won't.
No, and I think either that's what they're trying to cut out, you know.
Ollie, or she's got to be with somebody else.
And I didn't pick up on any of that between them.
It's back to the way it was when they just, you know, stumbled across each other, and they were just friends, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of back to that. But they still have such a great chemistry, even right. just a friendship.
When they're trying not to, they still do.
Right. They still just compliment each other so well. Mm-hmm. And she still, if you noticed, when he would get all, like, snippety and snide about something, she was the only one, even Thea, because I thought she was gone for, like, ever. She's not.
No.
She's just there as a sister and a mentor and, you know, helper.
She's working in the mayor's office. Like,
right.
Basically doing everything.
Yeah. But we haven't seen her. We didn't see her in the lair.
Right.
We saw her more on the mayor side
right.
of Ollie. And I was glad that she was there, but even Thea couldn't, like, kind of calm him, so to speak, mm-hmm. in the first episode. Like, Felicity was the one that, like, kind of roll her eyes and be like, yeah. you know what? So she's still the only person in his life that he cares enough about to be like, you're right. Let me take a second. So...
You'll see more of that in the second episode, too.
Okay. I like that with them, though. But I do, too.
And Prometheus, I think, is going to be a really awesome villain this year. And Tobias Church, I really like
yes.
him, too.
Yeah.
The other team members, I'm still on the fence about, except for Curtis.
Curtis, I'm all for.
Yep.
I don't know about Wild Dog, because, you know, we saw him too in episode one, and I kind of got, like, I felt bad for him. Like, when we first got introduced to him there, I felt bad for him because Oliver was just so mean to him. Like, he's as the Green Arrow, but yeah. he was just, like, so mean to him, and he's like, you want to help, go home,
right.
you know, like, and he shoots him in the leg, and I was like,
yeah.
Really? Like, what if somebody had done that to you and you decided to take up the, you know, the bow and the hood and traipse around the city? Like, not ass, Ollie. Like, I don't know.
He's trying to keep people from getting killed.
And I know he is, but
by shooting them in the leg. In
such a gruff way that I'm like, get your shit together. Like, I'm fixing to give Ollie the same hashtag I do Russell and Greg. And I'd be like, Ollie, I need you to get your shit together.
Another fairly amazing premiere, Supergirl.
Yes.
I was really kind of blown away by Supergirl.
Well, I was blown away, but I have one teensy negative tiny thing.
Yeah, I have something too.
So, we talked about this because we talked about the pod and how they left things.
Yeah.
And I was like, clearly she knows who it is because you see the look on her face. And Russell's like, well, don't you remember they have her go, you, no. That's not what happened. No. That's not what happened at all. Like,
didn't know who he was.
Right. They redid basically that scene in this episode. And she's there with Martha Manhunter. And he tells her to be careful, just like he did before. And she opens it up and she's like, what? Like, she has no clue who this guy is. None of them know who he is. They're pretty sure he's a Kryptonian, but they're not sure if he is. Mm hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay. No, I just, like, it hit me, like, really, like, oddly. That kind of tweaked that little thing there.
I was just happy it wasn't Crypto. But anyway, my...
Hashtag bring Crypto back.
And I don't want to, you know, I would rather talk about the positives, and we will, but Superman's suit...
And I looked at it again because you posted that picture and you were like, you drew little arrows and you were like, is anybody bothered like by this?
And I was like, it's where the cape meets the front part of the suit and it has these bars above the S symbol or whatever, and it just looks weird. It just takes me, like, I'm trying to look at Superman and all I'm staring at are those two little parts of his costume. It's driving me insane.
Which, you know what's really funny? Like, I didn't even, like, find it that, like, I truly, like, I saw it. And so when you were like, those little parts, I was like, oh, those, okay. But, like, I only saw his face.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm weird. It's
and
probably
the fact
just
that,
me.
Like, he pulls that suit off oh so well.
Yeah, he does. Mm. He is a very handsome dude. I think he kind of looks better as Clark.
Well, most of the pictures I've ever seen of him and that I shared, you know, when we talked about him, because he was my nerd eye candy for the last podcast, and, you know, I kind of talked about him a lot and shared a picture with you guys. Like, I like the scruffy him.
I do, too.
And then, like, other shows. So it was weird when he was, like, all clean shaven and, you know, and he kind of brought some of that, like, I don't know. Scruff's not the word because he doesn't have any, but that kind of like swagger back
When
he was in the suit. Like that swagger he kind of has when he has that stubble and stuff. Mm-hmm. He kind of like got it back for me when he was
in
the suit.
Well, he's in a Superman suit. You got to have a little bit of swagger.
Maybe that's just my thing. You know, men in uniform. You know, yeah. I did marry a soldier.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't help but have swagger. But it was funny. When he showed up at the DEO, is that what it's called?
I expected a different reaction because, you know, they've talked all through season one about how he was anti them. Mm-hmm. And he walked in and, you know, they were all fawning over him.
They were.
Like, oh, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. And he was very humble.
He was.
And I think that's why I am going to enjoy this incarnation of Superman.
I think so, too.
He was just humble, and he immediately just took to her like, you know, you're my cousin, and I'm here for you. And you can see the support that he is truly willing to offer. What I thought was hysterical is when she was like, I have to, like, and he was like, oh, you mean James? And she's like, what? How did you know?
But, like, well, like, we are friends.
Right, but he's, like, so approving of it, and just... Like, for once, they're actually showing them to me from other things I've seen, and maybe this has happened before and I'm just forgetting it, but you're actually getting a true, like, family, family ship. That's not really a word, but I'm making it a word. And friendship from the two of them. That it's funny because she's actually older than him, but it's kind of like, hey, little sis.
Right, right. I like that too. In a couple of scenes, I thought it might have been a little awkward because it looked a little too friendly, maybe early in the episode, but then it seemed to level out.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about, but I guess it depends on, like, did you grow up, like, really close with, a lot of your cousins?
Yeah, I had one brother and four boy cousins, and I was okay. The only girl.
Well, see, I did, on the one side of my family, like, we're pretty much all girls, and then just a couple of boys, and they were really close with us, because they were the only boys. And on the other side of my family, me and my one cousin are the only girls, and all the rest boys. Mm-hmm. And they would do that, like, throw their hand around, and mm-hmm. grab us and, like, side hug.
Mm-hmm.
So I was noticing some of those, but I see where what you're saying and how some people may be like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, like, I grew up in kind of a really close, tight-knit family where we had Sunday dinners together with the one side of the family, and then on Friday nights we had game night with the other side of the family, and, we did that. Every week we saw each other, but we still did the side hug, and, like, I went to our, I had one that treated me more like a sister than he did a cousin, so I could kind of see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I could also see the, like, creep factor to it.
Something else that surprised me in that episode were the effects, especially that opening scene with the, or was it opening, was it the shuttle or whatever it was?
Yes.
Yeah, that was awesome. It looked really good.
It did, and I was surprised because what's funny is, have you ever noticed the picture quality on CW? Like, this is not downing them, but it's always, like, dark lighting-wise.
Yes.
And, like, that's just all their shows. And it's almost got, a little speckly to it, like original cable mm-hmm. had. And they still have that. But ABC has, like, a crisp, clear picture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we lost kind of, like, the crisp, not that it's not clear, but you guys know what I'm saying. Like, if you are a fan of CW, you know exactly what I'm
yes.
saying. So we don't have that we had when it was on the other mm-hmm. Station, but I felt like the effects, like you said, were better
yeah.
here than they were there, which I just thought that was a funny, like, contrast to, like, right. This looks different here, but this is better here.
Over here, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like when you go to the eye doctor and they're like, better one, better two. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was an odd thing, but kind of a neat thing. Because, I had told you guys I was hoping that with it being season two and them knowing how well it should do, that it would have a bigger budget.
Right.
And it looks like we did get a bigger budget.
I also like the little meta joke they had in the beginning when they go to the new headquarters or whatever. And Kara's like, why have I never been here before? Y'all always made me fly out to the cave.
And yeah.
It's like, oh, this is a new space. And, it's like 5 minutes from my house. And it was kind of a little wink and a nod,
Yeah.
To moving over to the CW. I thought that was cute.
I did think that was cute, too. Like, not that I'm like a dumb blonde or anything, but at first I was like, oh. And then I went, ha! I thought it was great.
Let's see. You didn't watch Legends, but...
No, I really wanted to, but I was having a moment with a 10-year-old that, just needed to have a movie night with his mom, so...
That's totally cool.
Well, I will tell you, Netflix just let me down tonight.
Not my Netflix.
Oh, yes, and you're going to feel the same way about this show.
What?
So, he wanted to watch something Halloween-wise, and I was like, well, look, now that we've done this and this and this, we don't have as much time to watch anything. So, we typed in the word, Halloween, haunted, spooky, all these different things to see what you could find. Because, God forbid, they put a section where we can just search by holiday. That would be fantastic, Netflix.
That is a genius idea.
Fantastic. Maybe I should write them and be like, I want
some. Yes, you should.
But, they have one that's original, and it's called Marsha's Spooky Stories. And, like, illustration-wise, when we, like, saw the opening and stuff, I was like, oh, that's really cute. Okay, sure. And then, I'm sorry, but Marsha's stories are the dumbest shit I have ever sat through. I was like, you know what? I'd rather watch Teletubbies over this crap.
Oh, God. That is saying something. Well, they all can't be winners.
I guess, but my kid likes it. He watched, like, the first two episodes because he fell asleep. And then we started falling asleep. And then when I got up so I could record with you, I thought it was great, though. You guys are going to love this. He was like, can you turn it to the Munsters?
Aww.
So
you're like, why didn't we just start with the Munsters?
Why didn't we start with the Munsters? I knew you liked that. But I was trying to find something that, like, quick and, like, different that we hadn't watched before, so. I don't like it.
Real quick, I just want to mention I'm about 6 episodes into Luke Cage. So I don't know.
I haven't watched it.
I know, it's still really, really, really good. I really, really like it. It's like, it might be better than Jessica Jones for me.
See, and you know, I like Jessica Jones, but I don't love Jessica Jones.
Well, then you'll definitely like it more, I think.
I hope so. And I just was so, like, me, I'm really kind of invested in Gilmore Girls, and then all these things I have recorded, and then trying to watch things live, and by the way, the Cubs are in the playoffs, so you better bet I'm going to be watching that, so.
I forgot you were a Cubs girl.
Oh my God, yes. And we, whoa. I don't want to jinx anything that's happening.
No, don't. Mm. And then, and real quick, I literally know nobody else who watches this show, so. Nobody cares, but Halt and Catch Fire on AMC.
I want to watch it. I just never did. Sorry.
They had their season 3 finale this week. It was so good. Lee Pace is so amazing.
Oh, I love him.
I can watch him watch another character. This is how good he is in this show. Like, I'm just looking at this scene, and they're just doing nothing. You know, they're small talking and just trying to be in the same place together. And he is doing nothing but looking at her, and it's awesome. That
speaks volumes, I think, for a actor's ability to act and to grasp our attention when we just want to watch you watch another actor act. I know that's like a mouthful,
that's exactly what you're doing. And maybe I'm just a weirdo, but it's fantastic. Honestly, the third season's over with, and you can probably still watch it all on demand. But if anybody gives any flip about this show, just please go watch it. It's so good. The performances are so good.
Well, I'm definitely going to get to, like, it's in my list, like, on Netflix, but I just haven't been able to. Yeah.
All right.
I'll do it.
Is there anything else you want to say before we take our break?
Well, should we let them kind of know what we're going to do in the second half? You think we should let it be a surprise?
You can tell them.
So when we come back, guys, we're going to have a friend of ours who is an amazing, illustrator and author. I kind of want to, like, not tell you his name and let you be like, surprise. So I'm not going to, I'm just going to tell you that we have an amazing, illustrator author friend who's going to join us. He's also acted in a few things. So come back and see who we got for episode 4. And see what he has to say about just all the crazy questions that we're going to ask him.
All right. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Bye. Come back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed. PTBN Pop, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Will it be now, Mr. Moore? Whisper slow, in curls or small. Take a back seat or play pharaoh. Dance with me and shake your bones.
Welcome back. It's Geek and Sassy, episode number 4. Thanks for sticking around. We have a very, very special guest on this half of the episode. Miranda, can you tell us about our guest?
Yes, we have our fabulous friend, Brett Brooks. For those of you that don't know Brett, he's an illustrator, writer, and actor. And his most recent publications include what he calls his gritty crime noir, which is Dust Bunny, his space western, Deuces Wild, and what he calls his tongue-in-cheek gag book, How to Kill a Spider, which is fantastic.
It is.
All of these are published through Basement City Productions, and you can find them easily yourself. Brett has received a degree in sequential art from Savannah College of Art and Design, and that was in 2009. And since then, he has graced us with works from different companies such as Disney, Hardwalk, and even Mars. And recently, in 2015, Brett did something that I think is really cool, and he lent talents to the film world. And he co-wrote and co-starred in an awesome mystery thriller feature film, and it's called Patient. And I'm pretty sure he can let us know for sure, but I'm pretty sure that was picked up by Shoreline Entertainment for international uses recently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. Wow, that was a loaded intro.
Hey, that's okay.
Well, you do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you got to fill the day somehow, right?
That is true. And we ask you to be here because, you know, we're actually huge fans of your work, and you're a fantastic friend too, of course. So, we just, I guess we have some questions for you to like let people that don't know you as well get to know you and
or decide if they want to know me.
Oh, well, they would be really sad if they didn't, I think.
Well, I'm going to take your word for that one.
Okay. All right. So, how about you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, what makes Brett tick? Like, what?
Oh, man. I think what I get up to do every day, the reason I get up out of bed every day is because I just enjoy creating. I enjoy storytelling. I enjoy anything that I can get my hands around that I can, you know, see something through to the final product. And whether that's something that takes, you know, a year or whether it takes just the afternoon, I enjoy seeing something to its finality. But even more than that, I enjoy the process of building a story, of building a narrative, whether it's a simple narrative or a complex narrative where you've got, you know, many characters interacting with backstories and, you know, their relationships, or whether it's something as simple as, what I've been doing this month with Inktober, which is a small little Halloween tale. It's going to be about 32 pages and I'm doing a page a day, and it's just following this little, like, you know, this little monster kid around who's trying to find himself. I think just the act of taking something that we can all emotionally, you know, in some form or fashion connect to, and sort of repackaging that and delivering it to an audience and getting their reactions from it, whether it's a good reaction or a bad reaction, just to get a reaction. That is kind of the thing that makes me want to get up and continue every day.
I think that's fantastic.
I do too.
A lot of your works, like even just your drawings, like, they're fantastic. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, we love them.
Thank you.
So with that, I think Jenny had a question.
Well, I was curious because I don't really know you that well personally. I Facebook stalk you a little bit, but
that's fine. I take it as a compliment
because I love Dust Bunny. I really hadn't read much in the way of comics. I told myself I would never read comics, and then I just kept getting introduced to all this cool stuff, and one of those things was Dust Bunny. But how did you get started as an illustrator?
As an illustrator, I think it's just always been in the bones. You know, it's something I've done since I was a kid. I was a child. I was largely self-taught up until, you know, college, when I actually did get formal training at Savannah. But I mean, the story that I always tell people is that I remember very clearly when I guess that fuse finally burned down and the bomb went off. When I was a kid, I grew up reading a lot of newspaper funnies, the Sunday comics and then things like that. And I didn't really read a lot of comic books. In fact, I don't think I owned any, you know, Marvel, DC. I just didn't get into that. What I enjoyed reading was Mad Magazine, Spy versus Spy and things like that, when they, you know, would put those on the magazine racks in the grocery stores. So at a young age, that being my influence, I knew that I couldn't do anything with Garfield or Bugs Bunny or, the Ghostbusters, because they didn't belong to me. I didn't understand trademark. I didn't understand what copyright was or legalities. All I knew was that that wasn't mine, so I couldn't do anything with it. Just, it was a very basic understanding of ownership. And because of that, I thought, well, what if I came up with my own characters that nobody else in the universe knew about, and they were my little, you know, prized possessions? And the first characters that I ever came up with in my bedroom, sitting on the floor, was a little bomb and a little stick of dynamite, and their names were Bommy and Dee. And that fulfillment at that young of an age, where it was like I had my own little secret that nobody else knew about, and they could only know about it, you know, at my, I guess, discretion, you know, how much I wanted to give to people about it, or how little I wanted to give, whatever story I chose to put them in, was in my total control. And there was this buzz that I got off of that, that continued on, and it just kind of kept getting stronger with every character I'd create or every story I'd write. And I think it's followed me into adulthood, because I don't think I'd still be doing it if that creative, you know, fire, I guess you'd say, wasn't there still. So that, I would say, is, you know, I've been doing illustration for a long time, but that was a quintessential moment in the development of myself as a creator, was realizing that, like, oh, I don't have to do other people's stuff. And to realize that as an 8-year-old kind of changes your course, you know, for the rest of the time there.
That is really young. That's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
My 7-year-old, you know, he still got a way to go.
Start him young, though. Yeah. Start him young. That's when I started. And it's funny because, like, it's with anything. It's with, you know, if you're a baseball player or you're a ballerina or you enjoy cars and you become a mechanic, it's interesting because those passions are sort of instilled sort of in an unforeseen way at a young age, and you don't have to be told to love something. And you can't really teach love as far as passion goes for something. You can't really teach someone to be passionate about a craft. They have to sort of have that that natural draw to it, that, you know, that sort of invisible magnetism towards something that they love. And I just, illustration and character work and storytelling. And at the time, I don't think I knew it was storytelling. I knew that I wanted to tell stories, but if you'd asked me what I like doing, I would have said, I like comics or something. You know, there wasn't that solidified definition of what I was actually, you know, developing myself as at that age. But the thing is, no one had to tell me to do it. You just sort of have that innate desire to sort of pursue that. And then you do.
Well, I think that's fantastic because I know a lot of parents now, when they really want their child to have a passion for something, they try to put them in a box or put them into doing something that the kids really don't love and they really don't have a passion for. So you being that age and realizing it was something you loved already, I think that's absolutely fantastic and can say volumes to other kids and parents out there who they want their kid to be passionate about something.
Sure, sure. And when I was growing up, we didn't have, I didn't have a computer, you know? I mean, I got a Nintendo Entertainment System for Christmas when I was like, God, what was I, 8 or 9? But we grew up with a backyard and sticks, you know? I mean, we had three-wheelers, we had bicycles, we had a blackberry patch in the corner of the neighborhood during the summer. We had forts and tree houses. We had a go-kart with my friend across the street, and everything else, you had to fill the gaps with your own imagination. I mean, you had to. So, you know, we spent hours outside fighting invisible robots, you know, that we were certain were going to come take over our neighborhood. And if they were going to come, you know, a la the training of such films as The Goonies, we were going to protect our neighborhood. So we had nothing but imagination. And, you know, I grew up with Lincoln Logs and Legos, things that they were given to you in these jumbles of pieces. And you had to create the purpose from the pile. And, so I think that was sort of instilled at a young age. I don't know that my parents even necessarily knew they were doing it. But it was something that I sort of latched onto and that sort of creative, you know, engineering, I guess, essence, it's sort of like glazed over every little thing that I touched. You know, you find yourself sort of being creative in whatever outlet you can, you know, you can express that, I guess. If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
No, I think it
no,
does.
No, it does.
I'm on a tangent there.
No, it absolutely makes sense. Jenny and I both kind of grew up the same way you did. You know, we didn't have a computer. I think the first computer in my house was, I was maybe a freshman in high school, yeah. And it still was dial-up. So.
Sure. Oh, yeah, I had that.
Yeah, I mean, I was the same way. I mean, yeah, we got the Nintendo systems and the Segas and things like that, but you played it because it was cold outside or too hot outside, mm-hmm. or, you know, you didn't spend right. all day on that. And I grew up on a farm, so you definitely didn't spend all day doing that.
Right. We got bored. After like an hour or two of playing Mario, like, we wanted to go back outside. I mean, we wanted to not play Nintendo anymore. We wanted to go, you know, build and climb and fight and, you know, ride our bikes and stuff like
that. Oh, yeah.
That's what we had to do.
That's exactly what you did. But, you know, I want to say, like, starting at such a young age, you've obviously been doing this for quite some time. So I want to know, do you have, like, a process or a ritual when it comes for you to coming up with ideas? You know, like, you were sitting in your bedroom and you created, you know, those two characters. Like, is there something that you do to get there?
I think every story is different. I think every story comes from a different place. You know, sometimes you're inspired by life events, you know, your own personal circumstances to throw something out there. Sometimes you get hit by a movie the right way, or you get hit by something that you want to say or you feel led to say in the most tasteful, tactful way you can do it, you know, to communicate an idea. Sometimes it's just you're inspired to draw some crazy cartoon from the 80s and you know, you fart it out and then you put it online and everyone enjoys it. And that's the end of that idea. Like that was inspiration. It was meant to be there for a poof of a minute and then you're done. Something more long lasting. And I even say long suffering, like Dust Bunny, that. So we were talking about, you said that, you know, I didn't really read, I had no desire to do comic books. I majored in sequential art, but I majored in it because you drew all the time. That's all you did. You learned how to draw. It was really just pounded into you. And then the storytelling element was sort of glazed, you know, was sort of injected into that whole process. So whether it was comics or not, you were learning to tell stories visually. And that was the appeal for me, because that's what I obviously, like I said, did when I was a kid. But when you've done that over and over and over, and you've done your assignments and everything, and then you graduate, and then you've, you know, worked for a company, and you've done freelance and everything, you sort of hit this ceiling. I won't even say you're hitting the ceiling. You're really just kind of plateauing. You're working for a client from home, and you're trying to figure out what's the next step. And Dust Bunny was simply a hearkening back to my childhood. That is 100% in its pure form. That's what it was. I was walking through Forsyth Park, downtown Savannah. And I've probably told this story 100 times at panels and stuff, but that's, I was walking through the park and it just kind of hit me. I think I want to make a graphic novel. And it was just that simple of a decision. And when I got back, I walked down like to the, you know, gas station, Parker's, that's where everybody went to get like candy and sodas and stuff. I went down there, got a coat, came back and immediately started just going through sketchbooks and finding out, okay, if I'm going to do a graphic novel, I got to draw this character probably 1,000 times. So which character do I not mind drawing 1,000 times? and who do I want to wrap a story around? And how can I expand these ideas that are in sketchbooks that are really just, you know, fragments of concepts? They're not even like fully developed ideas. And I guess the burn just never went away. Then the script came, and then the first page of the book came. And this was back when Facebook wasn't really... Everybody wasn't launching a page for something every day. Right. This is back when it was kind of a scary thing, because I launched my Dust Bunny page and I was about to send it to like 800 friends. And it was like, once I hit that send button, I have to commit to this. This is something I have to start and have to finish. I can't just put something out there and then get tired of it and just walk away because it inconveniences me, or because I don't, you know, or because I can't afford it suddenly or whatever. You know, I have to see this through to the end.
Right.
And so that's kind of where that came from. I could probably go way deeper into the reasoning for starting the book, but I remember that being a big part of it. Deuces Wild, I think, has been more of I want to see if I can challenge myself in different areas that are different than the first, you know, unique from the first book I did, which has proven to be exactly that, very ambitious project that, I am looking forward to finishing at some point, which I will finish. But that's been an up and down process. So I think everything that I do, it comes from a different place, but you know, it's it all depends on the nature too of what you're trying to communicate with those ideas. If that makes sense, you know.
It does. I will say for me, when I picked up Dust Bunny, I knew I wanted to read it, but the foreword of it was very personal and you know, revelatory, and it made me want to just read the rest of the book, you know, and plus it's gorgeous, but
thank you.
You know, I could tell it was very personal, and that was one of the things that made me want to read it, because I like that sort of personal story. And the other question I had about Dust Bunny in particular, why did you do black and white?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good question. Black and white for a couple reasons. I think, first of all, you know, I was one of my earlier influences was Doug Tenapel, who developed Earthworm Jim. He created that character, and I think he does like a graphic novel a year, if not two. It seemed like an easier way to execute what I wanted to do, and it was a crime story. Right. I kind of wanted to honor the old black and white execution of you know, the visual style choice that, you know, that comes with a story like that. That has been the antithesis of Deuces Wild, which has been nothing but, you know, one headache after the next, one mountain after the next to climb with that, because of the color theory and the studies and the everything that's gone into that. But Dust Bunny was very much, like you said, it was a personal thing. In fact, I mean, I'd argue that it was pseudo autobiographical. But the black and white, I think, was just a lot of fun. Also, like, I just wanted to have fun with this book, and I didn't want to overcommit to something, you know, like color, you know, coloring an entire graphic novel, because I'd never done it before, so I didn't know how long it was going to take. I guess that's the best I can give for that. It's interesting too, because I've got the banner hanging on my wall, and from the first page of the book to the 180th page of the book, there's a clear evolution, to me, at least I can see it, an understanding of like form and character development and how these characters actually work. So I think the black and white choice was an accidentally good one, because I can't imagine having done that book in color.
Yeah, I agree. I actually had the same thought yesterday when I was rereading it. It's like as it goes along, I could tell, you know, it just gets better. Like it gets prettier, it gets funnier even, and more, you know, kind of emotional. I really love this book.
Thank you.
That was my first introduction to you as well. Obviously, you know, Kelly had his shop at the time and it was there. Mm-hmm. And I was getting back into comics, and I said, you know, I'm not going to lie, you know, I read like the My Little Ponies and all this, and we come in here for, you know, my kids' comics, you know, but I want something different. And he was like, well, hey, have you tried this? He's local, and this was before I had met you and we become friends. And I was like, sure, I'll get it. And I was absolutely blown away. I normally, when I'm trying to read a book like that, black and white, I'm like, I can't do this. But it fit. It was perfect. It was extremely well done. And it's what you wanted. Like, when you got to the end, you were like, oh, that's what I wanted, and I didn't even know it.
Yes.
Like,
Good.
I just absolutely loved it.
No, that's awesome. That's a high compliment. I appreciate it.
So, in a normal day, in a day in the life of Britt Brooks, what are three things that are constant for you?
Coffee, at least 8 to 10 hours in front of this computer, and not showering. When you work from home and your human interaction is a little more limited in your workplace, you know, you have the luxury of deciding if you want to do certain things or not for the sake of productivity. Three things that are common for me, frustration. Definitely a daily thing for me, because, you know, it's not just the frustration of like personal goals. It's the frustration of having to balance things that you have to have in your life, like, you know, like paid jobs, paid work, mm-hmm. and balancing that with what you are just, you know, fiending to get your hands around and work on that's been kicking around in your head for, you know, 2 or 3 days or a month or whatever. So balancing work that you kind of have to do with, you know, pleasurable work or work that you want to do. That is definitely a daily challenge for me. I would say definitely motivation and dedication. The one thing, and let me clarify that so that doesn't sound like, you know, laziness being repackaged. what I tell a lot of people is, especially like younger guys that are girls that want to talk about, like, where do you get your inspiration and how do you stay inspired and how do you stay motivated? And the answer is you don't stay motivated. You just end up having to freaking do it. You know, like there's no job in America that everybody gets up and wants to absolutely go to every day. There, of course, you know, the dream is to get a job that at least is relevant to your passions or your desires, and be able to go to that every day. And even if you don't, you know, maybe find a job that you at least like, but nobody likes their job every day. And it goes the same, I think, for comic artists. I think it goes the same for actors and anybody. You don't get up and love it every day. So the inspiration, as I always explain it, is the puppy love. You know, when you get inspired, you meet a new girl, you know, it's like, it's all about her. There's not even the idea that she has baggage. Like you're all about her, and you want to know everything. You ever spend every minute, you know, you're texting every freaking emoticon that you can possibly download. You're just sharing every stupid detail with her, you know, and it's fun. And then you get married, and I've never been married, but marriage is work, and marriage is not easy.
Truth.
That's very
That is absolutely the dedication to your craft. You know, you can get inspired to go, I'm going to do this. I got this great idea about this rabbit. He's a cop. Oh, wouldn't it be cool if they lived in a city that's in a basement, and all these ideas are just, you know, flooding. And then all of a sudden you have to sit down at a blank piece of paper and write it. And that is the marriage. That is when you have to decide, do I love this enough to try to make this a thing where I can communicate it to people? and hopefully reap any sort of benefit from it. And even if you're not reaping benefit financially or otherwise, just to do it because you love it so much, you know, sometimes it's not waking up and choosing to love something. Sometimes it's choosing to wake up and not cheat on it, you know, and that is an absolute act of love, is, you know, making that decision to continue to love and dedicate yourself to something or someone. And so when you wake up with that attitude towards your work, I think it transforms the way you apply yourself. At least that's the way I see it.
I think that's a fantastic, like, analogy and explanation, because for some people, like, you are married, and for some people they're not. It's not to say that they never will be, but just to show the, you know, dedication. It is the same kind of dedication. It is the same kind of love. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit different, but it's essentially, at the end of the day, the same thing. And I've never heard it explained that way.
Me either.
I love how you explained it, because as someone that is married, I get exactly what you're trying to say.
Good. Awesome.
Well, you told us some of the things that you read when you were a kid that made you say, well, I can't do that, but I'm going to do this because mm-hmm. it's my own. In all of those things that you did read, do you have, or, you know, looked at visually, do you have favorite artists from that? Do you have someone, I guess, that, you know, like you said, you read those and that made you want to do it yourself, but who's your favorite when it comes to that?
Early on when I was younger, Garfield made me laugh, like really laugh, like good belly laughs. And I was a child, and his humor just worked. That comic strip, Jim Davis's stuff just worked. The Far Side by Gary Larson.
Yes.
Was a big one for me. That was an interesting comic because that I think that somehow implanted the concept of flipping things on its head. Like, he had a very unique way, a very odd way of looking at things. And to be a 10-year-old kid and read it and get it. That was, I at the time, of course, I wouldn't have known what that was doing to me, but I think that influenced a little bit. I didn't really read Calvin and Hobbes as much as everyone. I think it's because when I opened up the newspaper, I wanted minimal words and mostly pictures. And Calvin and Hobbes was not that. It was a lot of words and you know, sometimes only 3 or 4 illustrations. So I didn't get into Calvin and Hobbes until later in life. But, you know, things like that, the Looney Tunes were a big thing. And all of these you know, IPs and properties and characters, the thing they had in common was they were all essentially short form storytelling. Especially comic strips, you've got 3 panels to set the joke up, get the meat of the joke, and deliver the punchline, and you've got to do it in 3 pictures. And I think that, again, not knowing it at the time, was teaching me, you know, how to tell a story in a short form. And then as you get into, you know, you grow up and you get into comic books, you read a little more, you know, you start watching, you know, movies and seeing how, like, narratives are handled, and you're sort of accidentally absorbing all of these formulas and these the construction of a narrative. It's starting to sort of implement itself into your own work, and you're starting to kind of regurgitate the things that you see. You might not even understand why you're doing it. You just know that you are, and it's working. And I think that was sort of the beginning of, like, of my adventures into storytelling. I don't think I had a favorite. I mean, I'm always going to go back, I think, to Bugs and Daffy. I think because they were just the most consistent thing, you know, that they kept coming at me. And the idea that you never knew what cartoon was going to come on next, you know, there was always, you know, they always played up to the audience. There was a lot of stuff that the Looney Tunes did that I think I stole a lot from. Warner Brothers in general, actually. Animaniacs, Freakazoid.
Animaniacs.
Yes.
Cats Don't Dance, Osmosis Jones, all the old animated stuff, Iron Giant, all the stuff they came out with. I was convinced as a child that I was going to go work for Warner Brothers Animation. And of course everything changed, you know, in 95, 96. But I'd say that as a company was probably one of my biggest influences.
That sounds like my kid. He's determined. He's going to go work for Blizzard. And I'm like, you do that, buddy, because then I won't have to pay my subscription anymore.
Right. Yes, exactly.
What about somebody more current? Is there somebody today that you enjoy?
I follow a lot of artists on Instagram, and I have been, I don't know when I got into these guys, but there's a duo called Creature Box.
Yes.
And you've heard of them. I can't remember the 2 guys' names, like Mike and Dave or something. I can't remember their names, but, they do fantastic work, and I steal and borrow from their techniques all the time. Like, I love following their stuff on Instagram and seeing, you know, the different I mean, it's a different creature every day, a robot or, you know, weird alien. They're very fun to sort of observe and see how they handle, you know, structure and anatomy and character design and push and pull and all the principles that go into, you know, making an interesting looking character. I'd say those guys, Mike Kunkel, who did Hero Bear.
I love that book.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. Gosh, this is one of those things where like someone asks and you know you've got like 100 artists you can name, and you can't think of a single one when you're on the spot. Humberto Ramos, I think that's how you say his name. Comic book artist Joe Mad, old comic book artist that's been around for a long time. In fact, he did Battle Chasers, which was the first graphic novel that I ever purchased in Orlando, Florida, back in like 2001. And his stuff's really good. I think actually he released a Kickstarter for his Battle Chasers game. It got like rebooted or something, and it made ridiculous amounts of money that I'll never even understand what you would do with that. Yeah, there's a handful. Like I could probably go through that answer for a while. And then of course, obviously Disney as an entrepreneur and character creator was always, he always, you know, got me right there in the heart every time.
Oh yes. I'm a huge Disney fan over here.
Oh, sure.
I love it. So in talking about the people that you loved, and so we've touched on several things that you've created so far, and you created some amazing pieces.
Thank you.
I have to say my favorite, and this may surprise you, but it's actually the recent one that you've been doing for Inktober, the Halloween series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, myself and a few other people have been like, so when is this going to be a book? But I love it so much. I want you to kind of like tell our listeners and even me and Jenny a little bit more about it. I mean, I know you touched on it when we introduced you, but like,
sure. What
made you participate in Inktober? What made you create this character? You know, just
missing out for 4 years in doing it. That's exactly why I decided to do it this year. All my artist friends do it. I mean, all the artists online do it. You know, it's been going on for a long time, and I always see, you know, October 1st or 2nd rolls around, I'll see people post and I go, I should really do that. But I'm in the middle of a book and I just can't justify jumping ship and doing another project, which I very much like realized that sometimes it's okay to not work on the same thing every day and to sort of give yourself a break and explore the styles, you know, that you haven't really gotten to explore. Inktober was something where the original idea, I guess first of all, for your listeners, Inktober is essentially a 31-day challenge where artists ink something every day. It could be a comic page, it could be just a little sketch of something that they put, you know, brush or quill tip to. But it's the idea is to essentially keep you active, like that you want to keep practicing your craft. And my initial idea for this, for the 31 days, is I was going to do 31 movie monsters chronologically, starting with Dracula. From like 30 something? I can't remember what the actual date was. But I was going to move chronologically through movie monsters, go Frankenstein, and I think it was Jekyll and Hyde and the Mummy, and then move up to Jason and Freddy, and then go up to the, you know, to Saw, the doll from Saw, and then Samara from The Ring. I was going to end on the Babadook. Like I had 31 monsters like I was going to ink. And the more I looked at it, the more I was like, this would be fun to do if it wasn't scheduled, but I don't want to do this because they're not mine. You know, it was one of those things again where it's like this is essentially fan art, and I have a love hate thing with fan art, especially when it comes to, you know, making money off of it, depending, you know, that's a whole other topic. But for myself, I didn't want to do that. Because I didn't want to just produce something that surely many other artists were going to be producing that month. Everybody was going to be drawing vampires and werewolves and stuff. So I thought, well, if I have this opportunity to do something daily, I mean, you're a storyteller, man. Like, tell a dang story. Like, figure something out and tell it. It doesn't have to be complicated. Just make something that's going to be fun for you to not only do, but fun for people to read. And that's where Why Does the Jack-O-Lantern Smile came from. So up to this point, anybody that's listening, you can go to my Facebook page. And I think I'm going to compile all these in a slideshow at some point. And I do think that maybe in the next few months, I'm going to look into probably printing this or maybe even I'd like to do like maybe a crowdfunding thing and have it. I don't really know exactly how I'm going to approach this. Printing is not inexpensive by any means, but essentially the story is about this little guy named Robbie who's a little junior Frankenstein, and he's pieced together from many different parts, but he doesn't feel really complete even though he's finished. And he's sort of finding out that he's ostracized from the other kids. And the page that I start, that I'm posting today, is it starts my favorite part of the book, because he finally, you know, he meets the jack-o'-lantern and he starts to ask him, like, well, why do you smile? And what ends up happening is, and I won't spoil, you know, the ending or anything, but he essentially is vicariously living through this jack-o'-lantern and making suggestions from here until the end of the month, rather, that why he thinks the jack-o'-lantern smiles. So, like, why do you think he smiles? Well, I think he smiles because he serves this function for this person. And then it's like, well, maybe that's a little ridiculous. Maybe he does this for this person. And you sort of go through this sort of imaginative journey with Robbie. And I think, you know, the undercurrent of that is obviously, like, again, this kid is vicariously living through an inanimate object that's just got a smile carved into its face, and he's trying to figure out maybe why he should be smiling. So it sort of goes into it kind of goes to a warm place, and I'm actually really happy with how this story, it's already written, it's already done. I'm just sort of like playing catch up with the illustrations every few days. But yeah, I've been enjoying this. Yeah, actually a lot of people have been complimenting it and saying how much they really like the Inktober piece, which was actually like a real surprise, because I was doing this for my own kicks. I wasn't doing this to sell it. I had no intention of, like, you know, printing it. I just wanted to do something fun that could alleviate the daily frustrations of, you know, of either client work or trying to keep up with a graphic novel that looks like it's never going to be finished, but it will.
I've heard that before, you know, in interviews and things with other creators, something that they just kind of do for their own reasons ends up, you know, breaking open and everybody adores it. You know, I think that's really cool,
right,
when that happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic story, and I know that, like you said, you did this just to do it, and I think that's another fantastic thing, is you said, no, I will participate in Inktober, and I will do my own thing, and you did. And I will have to say, for me, on day 11, when it's already out, so it's not going to spoil anything, but it was the jack-o'-lantern smiled as wide as the night and dried Robbie's tears with warm candlelight. Uh-huh. Like, as a mom to a little boy who I've had to dry his tears a ton of times because he doesn't know where he fits in the world and he doesn't understand why people make some of the comments they do, like, that hit me in a way, and that's what you're trying to do, and you know, but that hit me in a way where I was like, damn you, Brett, and I just started, like, crying. But it was, like, a good cry, because it was, you know, you put it out there because it's something you love, and then it ended up hitting, you know, a reader, a viewer, in a way that, like, was deep and profound, honestly.
Well, if that got you, then I think the ending's gonna wreck your day.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So, no, it's funny you say that, because, and man, this could be an entirely different podcast, but one of the things that I've been discussing with, you know, I've got a small pool of talented, like, artist friends, film friends that we, you know, kind of share with each other a lot of stuff, or even just commiserate about our situations and what we'd like to be doing versus what we are doing. And if, you know, where we're at is where we want to be. It's a constant tug of war, you know, emotionally. But one of the things that we always talk about is, the minute this stops being fun, we're probably going to quit. Because at that point, you're just forcing it. And when the reasons that you're doing something creative or creatively based is for any reason other than being creative. Now, there's a business side to everything, and there's definitely, you know, merit to making money. You're trying to do something commercially viable. But even within those brackets, if you're not having fun doing it, it becomes a chore. And it almost feels like it's being, you know, there's a big difference between something creatively being pulled from you and you willingly giving it. And, you know, there's that middle ground where you're just exchanging. But when you're just giving something with no pretense, with no expectations, you know, not being, you know, chained down by some invisible, you know, trumped up timeline or whatever, it comes more naturally. And I think, I mean, I personally think that the best stuff I've ever done has been just because I wanted to do it, you know, just because there was a passion that I got lucky to be blessed with at a young age. And I think I'd be doing myself a disservice if I didn't sort of, you know, constantly honor that, you know, that sort of genesis, you know, where it all started, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. One of the questions I had, because I have, like, zero artistic talent, you're a full-time illustrator, you know, you have to have all the tools of your trade. What's in your workspace? What are your tools? What do you use?
What am I looking at right now?
Yeah.
I am looking at a laptop to my left, which I do a lot of my writing on. It also is mobile, so I can go to coffee shops if I want to work and get out of here. I have got an Intuos 4 Wacom tablet that I use that's probably 5 years old, but it still works, so I'm not going to buy a new one. And then I have a MacBook, or not a MacBook, I have an iMac that is also not new, but it still works, and it still gets everything that you've seen in the last, like, what's it been, 5-6 years, that it's all come from this little station here. My workspace is simple. Like, I don't have a big setup. I've got a big, splurged on a big desk that ends up just holding random sketches and papers all day. I've got my drawing table next to me with the overhead light. And then my Spotify tunes, and that's it. I mean, it's just, there's something nice about, it can be kind of daunting sometimes, but there's something nice about waking up in your office. You know, this is where I get to live, and it's where I get to work, and it's all one bill. So it's relatively inexpensive, but it's nice. Yeah, my workspace is very, it's just functional, I guess you could say.
What's on your Spotify?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's check it out right now and see. On my Spotify right now, that would be Paula Abdul.
Nice.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Actually, that's the song.
Of course it is.
I had my 80s mix going last night, so that's the last thing that came on. Oh my gosh, I've got Blues Piano, I've got Aerosmith, The Black Crowes, I've got a lot of film scores, The Guess Who, Bobby McFerrin, Blackberry Smoke, Eric Hutchinson. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. I have a lot of 60s and 70s rock and a lot of funk. Grand Funk Railroad,
nice.
The Gap Band, Ohio Players. One of my favorite artists of all time is Bobby McFerrin, who his big hit obviously was Don't Worry, Be Happy. But he's a...
I loved that song so much.
Oh, it's a great song. And he's just incredible. He's one of those guys that you're like, I wish I could get my artistry to the level that Bobby McFerrin has gotten his vocal talent, and to call it talent is even undermining what he does. I mean, it's not talent, it's just gift. But he's amazing. So I got Hall & Oates. I mean, you name it, and I've got it on here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mine was Metallica earlier today.
Okay.
Oh.
There you go. Everybody's got their thing.
I don't actually do a lot of Spotify. I do Amazon Music or Pandora.
Yep.
So I would
I do Pandora. Pandora's got a good chiptunes station where it's just like, it's almost like 8-bit, like Nintendo style music, smashed in with dubstep a little bit. It's nice, like mindless stuff to like tune out on, but it's also really, really nostalgic and fun to listen to.
I will have to see if I can listen to that.
Me too.
Absolutely. Background noise, like when I'm reading or something, I'm like the weirdo that I really like classical. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
I'm like reading or studying or doing something like that, but I'm like the one person. So,
yeah.
I guess mine would be Amazon, and I usually listen to like what's called alt rock. For anybody that has like Sirius Radio, it's like Alt Nation, basically.
Yeah. Everybody's got their flavor.
That's my flavor.
And that works. Metallica and alt rock, and I'm over here with Paula Abdul.
Hey, I love Metallica and Paula too, so it's a great thing. Do you have a favorite movie?
Like, 4 just sprung to my mind when you said that.
You can say 4 because I can't pick. Like, I have like 4 that I can't give love to just one, so I say them
sure,
all.
Sure, sure, sure. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I think, is always going to
be. Yes.
That was such a blend. And I think a lot of influence came from that for the first graphic novel for Dust Bunny. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, obviously. Ghostbusters, the first one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've always loved the Blues Brothers.
Nice.
And one of my. The Lion King and Cats Don't Dance, which was a Warner Brothers film that came out like in 2000 or 99.
Sorry. I loved that.
Sorry. Yeah, that was a big one. A little underdog story about a cat coming to Hollywood and wanting to sing and dance, but all the animals were ostracized and put into quote-unquote animal roles. It had a really great message, and I love the soundtrack as well. So I'm just kind of looking at my movie collection. I've got everything. I've got Bill and Ted, Guardians of the Galaxy, Jurassic Park collection, like, anything that's fun, I think, is kind of where I land.
And what I'm curious about this as a comic book fan. What are your top three comic book characters?
Like established ones that we all
know? Like maybe superheroes.
Well, yeah, it doesn't have to be ones that we know. But and I know you said you don't read a lot of them, but or
I
you
don't.
Did, but
I don't. What? I couldn't. It's almost unfair to like pick a favorite because I feel like I would just be cashing in on like my extension of knowledge for comic book characters for the most part is what I picked up, you know, obviously doing this for so long and going to a college where, you know, I was around sequential art, like fanatics for 4 years. I picked up a lot there. But I don't really have a lot of, you know, beyond like the films. And even that's like a bad base because every, you know, nerd online has explained to me why I should hate it. So I like, you know, like I can't even form a valid opinion about that, much less post that I like it.
No, don't listen to them. You are entitled to liking whatever you like.
Oh, I don't listen to them. I just enjoy complaining about it. Spider-Man, I think, has always been a favorite. I've always liked his poses. I've always loved how artists, like, execute his, you know, his, like, his lanky, wiry frame in the middle of, like, you know, the New York skyline. And he's got a great – I think he's got one of arguably the most tragic – backstories, you know, because he got his powers and then he, you know, his whole mantra with, you know, helping out the little guy and being your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, you know, that all came because he neglected, you know, he got mad at somebody and he let that overshadow, you know, his need to protect or whatever and, you know, got his uncle killed. So he's one of these guys that just can't love anybody. He can't have anybody in his life because they're going to get put in the crosshairs. And I think, I just think it's such a tragic story, but it's so interesting. But it's also ironic because I hate, with a passion, spiders. And
I was going to say, I think you have books about how to kill spiders.
I know.
Right, yeah.
That's why he did it, because he hates them.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's a palpable irony there. You know, I think.
It is so funny.
Yeah.
It is hilarious.
So, no, we talked about the same thing in episode one of my top five. I talked about how much I loved Spider-Man, but I absolutely hate spiders. Like, I've been bit so many times that I can't have the little antivenom shot anymore. I hate them so much. So
awful.
I think it's funny that I'm not the only person that's like, I love Spider-Man, but you know what I detest?
This is the way you got to it. Yeah, I couldn't do it.
No, which makes me love your book. I, like, almost pee myself laughing.
Do you have the second one?
No, I don't.
I have the second one. I read it yesterday. I was dying laughing. It is hilarious.
I gotta say, the second one is, I think, funnier than the first one.
I need it.
Yes, you do. It's really, really great.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, and I actually have about 12 pages done of the third one.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yay.
So I may co-release that in the Inktober story, kind of maybe under the same. I don't really know what my plan is yet, but I'm definitely working on finishing both of those as well.
I'm excited. I love that book.
I need to put this down. I'll just be laughing the rest of the podcast. Okay.
Yeah. And the third book is actually called How a Spider Kills You.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So we're flipping it. Yeah.
We love the game, too.
Yeah, the game is awesome.
The game turned out really good. The game's a lot of fun. I'm actually going across the street tonight. We have a speakeasy across the street from my lofts here. And they have game night on Thursdays. And I'm actually donating a copy of the game to the bar over there so people can play it.
It's fantastic.
One of the guys that does photography for DragonCon actually lives in the same complex as me, and we've gotten to be good buddies. And he holds a game night every week. And he said, "You should bring your Spider game over, man, and like, you know, give it to him and let him, you know, put that in with the collection of all their other stuff." I was like, yeah, we'll do that. So, but we have a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
We played it at Fanatics with some other friends of ours, and there was some laughter and some darn you! Like,
yeah, no, sure.
Very interesting. I like it a lot. I'm trying to think. Well, I was going to ask you your favorite band or musical artist, but I think you kind of already went there.
Yeah, it's really not much of an artist thing. It's more as much of an era thing. I think the 60s and 70s are always going to be where I land as far as stylistically and what I love kind of digging into while I'm working. Nothing beats a James Taylor song.
I like that you said that, because you're like, no, it's not an artist, it's an era. And I think that's a fantastic thing, because like, for some people it's a genre, for some people it's an era. It's not just like one person or one thing.
Yeah, I couldn't do that game where it's like if you went to an island and you only had one person you could listen to. That just doesn't apply to me. I'm just probably not going to go to that island.
I would get sick of, even if it was my favorite thing, I would get sick of it after a while.
Right, right.
I don't think I could do it. I really don't. Jenny, do you have any more questions?
No, I don't think so.
That's kind of like it. Is there anything that you really want people to know about any of your works? Or like, I know I can't ask you to pick a favorite there because that's like picking a favorite child, so I won't do that. Like, is there anything like you really want anybody to know before they go pick up any copy of anything that you have out currently?
I mean, the best thing I can tell people is that, you know, your large commercial talents and you know, ideas that get out there and make a big splash, you know, they start from someone who does something independently, every one of them. Maybe not every one of them, but you're you know, a lot of them do. And it doesn't just apply to me. It applies to my artist friends that I'm you know, Facebook friends with, or that I follow on Instagram, or that follow me on Instagram. You know, if you want to see something make a bigger splash and see more success come from that, you know, it's kind of in the, you know, hands of the people to take it out there and share it and sort of be a, you know, non-commissioned street team to sort of get it out there. Again, and this could be an entirely different, you know, topic to tackle at another time, but, you know, I'm kind of getting back to a place where I'm just trying to have fun with my work and trying to find the joy in it. When you have so much of it, you kind of like, you're inundated with scheduling and, you know, I have to do this, but I get to do this. And, you know, when you kind of like lose that attitude, you lose that frame of mind, it sort of alters your entire, you know, the way you treat your own work. So, you know, if you hate it, that's fine. And if you love it, that's fine. Because at the end of the day, I really just want to do it because I love doing it. And I hope that when I create something that the people that are picking it up and reading it are somehow emotionally impacted or, you know, affected by the things that, that I choose to say in these stories.
I think that's awesome. Like, I don't even know what to ask you next because I was just like, wow. Like, I had a moment of like pure silence because I was like, wow. Like, you just explain things. Like, anytime I've been around you and someone asks you a question, or like even today when we're asking these questions, you've always been to being able to explain them like so eloquently and quickly that it's just kind of, it shows your passion, it shows your drive. And it shows your love not only for your work, but for those of us that are like your fans too. And I love that. You know, any artist that can give us all of that in a package deal, I think is an artist that people should truly cherish and hold on to and continue to follow them, continue to support them.
Are you trying to make me cry like I made you cry in the book?
Yes.
Maybe I am.
You sly fox.
No, I think she's really going to make you, or, well, I don't know about cry, but I think she really wants you to participate in our closing segment.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
What's it called, Miranda?
So, guys, boys and girls, once again, it is time for Nerd Eye Candy of the Moment. She makes me do that every time, Brett.
I was going to say that wasn't pre-recorded.
Nope.
No, she makes me do it every time. I have to take in a deep breath, and like I even expand my hands really far because you guys know me, and I talk with my hands. So
right.
So, last time we let our guest Russell go first. Would you like to go first?
No, I need some time to think about this.
That's fair. That is
okay,
fair.
So, Jenny, you get to go first.
Okay, I'll go first. I really didn't know who I was going to say until just now. I read, which I'll talk about, I talked about this earlier, but I read Green Arrow number 8 this week, and it is, it has a lot of really great scenes with Oliver and the Black Canary, and it's just kind of, they're on a beach, and it's romantic, and there's some naughty bits going on, and then I watched Arrow today, and so I just had to say my nerd eye candy is Oliver Queen in his illustrated form and on the TV form. It's not even Stephen Amell specific. It's Oliver.
Well, really? It's not Stephen Amell specific?
I mean, it is. He did do the salmon ladder in his suit.
Oh, boy.
So there's that. But then also, Ollie from the comic book, he also really, really got me this week. So he's my nerd eye candy.
I feel like I should be uncomfortable.
Oh, why? Russell told us he was a bit uncomfortable because I got like really excited last podcast and he was like, oh my God, I'm blushing. I was like, ah, get over it. Like,
Russell, if you're listening, please send help.
Oh, that's great.
All right,
yeah, I'll let you have a few more minutes to think about it. I actually, you know, I think hard about this one. Like, you guys know that now.
Of course you
do. Episode 4. And I get really excited about this. So, there's a new show that's been on that I mentioned earlier and, you know, the first half. And it's called No Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I've stuck with it. And one of the main characters who is, he was in Frankenstein's Army. He was in Rogue. And what most people know him for, though, is playing Gallivant.
Okay.
And I could not pronounce this guy's last name because it's S-A-S-S-E. You guys want to take a stab at that for me?
Sassy?
Is it? That's what I was going to say. I was going to say sassy. But he's English. Like, he's from London, so I'm pretty sure it's probably pronounced something fancy that I can't do as I'm waving my hands in the air here. But his name's Joshua.
I don't know.
Sassy, maybe? Woohoo! That's Sassy. I'm not even going to try to talk British accent.
Yeah.
That'd be bad. I'd have all England pissed off at me. But, yeah. So, this guy, if you didn't see him in his Gallivant costume, like, you need to. I mean, hello.
Right.
Poor Brett's like, oh, my God, Miranda. Same.
Oh, man.
But, yes, he's like, oh. And I don't usually like the hipster look, so to speak, that's what I call it.
Like the man bun and the...
Well, he doesn't have a man bun. He wears a beanie, but he looks like if he took the beanie off, there would be a man bun for his character on No Tomorrow. But he has, like, the big, gaudy, like, Captain Hook rings on his hands and, like, his shirt's open where you can see part of his chest. And I usually hate that look because when I see people, like, in Dothan, we're walking around, I see people like that. I'm like, oh, God, dude, we live in Dothan, Alabama. No. Stop. But this, like, his character, whoa. Oh.
Well, makes me happy. There's that.
We really enjoy this segment, Brad.
I really do. I know. It's really funny to me.
It sounds like you could just do an entire podcast on, like, just this.
Yeah, nobody would listen to that.
Very good idea.
You can barely listen to it for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it's because he's part of it.
When did this slumber party start, and how did I end up in it?
Because I said, "Hey, Brett, we have this really cool segment called Nerd Eye Candy Moment," and you were like, "Yeah, sure. Don't even tell me what it's about. I'll stay." Yeah.
I thought it was. I really thought that it was like, what's the most beautiful figurine you've seen, or like the best comic book art? But it's literally. Male eye candy.
Yeah, so you think
it is absolutely geek window shopping. That's what we're doing right now.
Yes.
Well, that's a cool thing too, but we are kind of window shopping. I mean.
Right.
Good God.
Did you come up with anybody?
Yeah.
Me? Well, I don't know. I was so I'm looking around my loft, and I've got a lot of like figurines and art that hangs up. So I was trying to see if there was anything that like sparked anything. And on my shelf, I have all of these, you know, toys and stuff. And I only have like 3 female characters on the shelf, and it's Harley Quinn, which, you know, that's a big no because she's got baggage that I can't even begin to quantify, and she owns a hyena. And I don't want that in my house.
I was going to say, who wants to clean up that?
Like, I'm not cleaning up after a hyena. I don't want it, like, scratching my couch up. And I don't want that phone call from the neighbor saying, you know, hey, Dennis's frisbee went in your backyard, and he hasn't been home in 2 days. And I know you've got a hyena, and I know it's not about the breed. I know it's not about the breed. It's about the trainer. But I need you to, you got to figure this out. And I'm asking you because you literally married the most damaged woman in the history of damaged women. So she's out. And then the next one on my shelf is Princess Peach. And I'm not gonna, she's a princess though. And if her indecision to stay in a castle translates to finding a place to eat on a date.
Oh my God, this is the best ever.
Just give her mushrooms. She just wants mushrooms, yo.
And then the last one I've got is actually RC, the female transformer.
Okay. You know,
the girl transformer. I think she's the best decision, and for a couple reasons. Well, first of all, she's a robot. She's going to look the same in 20 years, and that's a plus. Nothing's going to be falling apart. And if it does, we can just go buy a new piece at an AutoZone. And she also, I don't have to drive on the dates anymore. You know, I just hop on and she takes us to wherever we're going to go, which will probably be somewhere like, somewhere we can both agree on, like a gas station. I go.
Yeah, you can grab some snacks, right?
I'm going to slam a dollar hot dog, get a slushie, get some chips to go, and she can go fill up on regular diesel or whatever her buzz of choice is. And then we can come home. She gets to sleep in the garage. I don't have to be dealing with anything. I can put on my Netflix and do whatever I want. So I think I'm going to go with RC.
That's an expensive date, though.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, you know. No, I mean, don't, you know, it's like girls like guys that ride motorcycles, and she is a motorcycle. So, like, it's cyclical appreciation.
Oh, my.
Wow, that was very revealing. That was very revealing.
I see, and you thought that this, like, segment was going to not be so great for you, and I just think you did better than we do normally.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. This changes my whole outlook on this segment.
I know, but, you know, I'm the only one that has yet to pick a, like, non-realistic or not real, however you want to word that, person.
Oh, they're real.
Well, they are real. I have one. Like, I have one. And
all right.
I guess one day it'll come out.
She's not giving up. She's not giving it up yet.
Okay. You hold on to that hope.
Yep.
I don't know when I'll finally reveal myself.
Oh, it'll be soon.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to mate me?
No, I would never. You open that cage and let that dove fly when you want it to fly.
You have to feel safe in that space before you
I like how you put that. Yes. You have to feel safe. Yes.
You have to get there on your own. Nobody can take that from you.
Yeah.
Brett, where can we find you on social media?
I'm on Facebook, and I think it's facebook.com/TheBrettBrooks. And my Twitter handle is also the Brett Brooks. And then my Instagram handle is just Brett Brooks. And that's with two T's and all those. And you can go to brettbrooks.com or basementcityproductions.com to buy the Dust Bunny, Deuces, Wadi, She, Won, How to Kill a Spider. Those are all for sale on basementcityproductions.com. So actually, if you wanted to just Google me, you can literally Google Brett Brooks, and I'm the top hit for my website. Yeah. So you can do that as well.
All right. Miranda, where are you at on Twitter?
So, as you guys know, but just a reminder, I am at Mom's a Nerd. We also have Geek and Sassy now on Twitter as well, at Geek and Sassy. And now you can also add us on Instagram, also just at Geek and Sassy, because why not?
Right on.
Do
so
it.
So where are you at, Jenny?
I'm at Jenny Cruz 2814. And, you know, I also post on the at Geek and Sassy. Thank you so much for being on the show, Brett. We really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. This was
so much fun. Now you can go back and listen to our other shows and
share them with everybody that I know.
Yes, please do that. That will work.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Place to Be Nation Pop family. Bye.
Bye.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Ooh, 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 ooh. worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry. Be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry. Be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry. Be happy. I give you my phone number. When you're worried, call me. I make you happy.
Don't worry. Be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. But don't worry. Be happy. Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy.
Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this.
Don't worry.
It will soon pass, whatever it is.
Don't worry, be happy.
I'm not worried. I'm happy.